Welcome to Beyond the Wild podcast, where we go venturing beyond the gear, beyond the subject, beyond the shot, to find the heart of wildlife and adventure creative. Beyond the Wild podcast is brought to you by PictureLine.com, your online source for everything photography. Listen in as we welcome guests from all specialties of wildlife and nature photography. We share tips and tactics learned from years of journeying into the wild. Your hosts are Jason Loftus, Ron Hayes, and myself, Mark Raycroft. Let's begin another episode of Beyond the Wild.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wild podcast with your host, myself, Ron Hayes, coming to us from beautiful Ontario is Mark Raycroft. He's looking a little frozen at the moment.
Right? What's well, this is
and the then right we've got the Jason gate. Loftus.
I didn't hear a thing you said.
Woohoo! Yeah. We said Mark Raycroft, who's looking a little frozen at the moment.
Yeah, right. Like it's winter here, but it's not. It's not. It's like we're 6 weeks ahead of schedule for temperatures. The snow is gone. It is. It feels like spring. The turkeys think it's spring. Everything. It's very unusual. But I am shocked that I froze because I upgraded to the top internet package 2 weeks ago and it should be super fast. That should not be happening. Let's hope it's a one and done. It's great to see you guys. Ron, for those watching on YouTube, it's got something new behind him. It's like light from the heavens. It's like an angel's wings behind him. What's this? Beyond the Wild podcast. That's cool, man.
You're only saying angel's wings because you were the model for the logo.
Yeah, I'm sure I qualify. Somebody might debate that in after death.
We'll ask Pilly on an upcoming episode.
There you go. Oh, that's cool. I love it. No reason to watch on YouTube. And does it? Yeah. You said it. So it's a sign with our logo, and it's illuminated from behind.
Sign with the logo with the LED backdrop, and we're gonna. I was just talking to Jason about. I'm gonna have to throw it on a dimmer switch because it's a little brighter than anticipated. But it traveled from the Far East, so I didn't realize that until I got the tracking information from. The shipping company.
And from the Himalayan mountains? Is that what we have on our logo then?
It made quite a trip, actually. Yeah, pretty close. A lot closer than I am here to the Himalayas. Wow. And Jason Loftus. Jason just came back from actually the first Beyond the Wild workshop, which, by the way, if you're in the judicial system, please listen up and be courteous to your jury pool. I was supposed to be at the workshop, got called for jury duty, and guess how long I was there?
Uh-oh. An hour.
5 minutes.
Oh, no.
I missed the workshop for 5 minutes of nope, no thanks. We do not need you on this jury.
That's terrible.
Because it was a criminal case, just as suspected, and just as I had talked to them about the week before. It's a criminal case and former law enforcement, and they didn't feel that I would be helpful to the defense. I did not fit into the jury of their peers, apparently.
You might be somewhat biased, huh?
Well, I sure was at that point.
I bet.
Because sounds like you guys had a good time. So
We did. And I've got the same backdrop if you're on YouTube. My deer antlers, that'll be changing here in the near future once my sign arrives from this long journey. But yeah, no, we did. We had a great trip. We did it with Adam Brubaker from Tied to Nature. And had five great guests come out and spend three and a half days and four nights chasing wildlife in Yellowstone. We had some really good encounters. And what's something that was a good point to make with folks is sometimes you go on a podcast, sometimes you go on a trip like this and conditions may not be ideal, right? Maybe, you know, you're really hoping for some more snow, for example. You're hoping for some way colder temperatures. And that was my take on this trip going into it, because it was just not the ideal conditions. Mainly all of Lamar Valley was pretty dry. There was a little bit of snow. If you got way deep into there up Cook City area, you know, there's obviously more snow up that way. But for the most part, you know, when there's not a lot of snow, the critters tend to stay away from the roads. They don't have to be close. So we really were having some heartache about where we're going to see some activity. And even though it was slower than I would have expected, it was about as slow as I would have expected. We had some really good encounters. You know, I'll just mention a few of them real quick, like a couple of coyotes that were really good. One with some a portion of a carcass, and another coyote on a bison head that had died right up by a cliff, which was really cool. And we had two ermine encounters or weasel encounters. And I've seen one ermine or weasel in Yellowstone in my entire life and didn't get any photos. And I got two photo opportunities this trip with a weasel. So that was cool. We did get a frosty bison. We had some snow with some cold temps one morning and got out there real quick first thing and were able to capitalize on that. Had a really good red fox encounter, found the bighorn sheep and had some really good shots and a good shoot with them. So, you know, all in all, it was a really, really good trip with some really unique encounters and encounters that I rarely have, even when I do have a lot of snow and what I would call more game activity overall. So, yeah, great, great workshop. We had a really good time. We had really good guests. Everybody had a really good time with us and got some really good shots. And I think everybody left happy. So,
and the one that really upset me on the jury thing was I have never even seen a pygmy owl. I know I've been around them, but you guys had some good opportunities with a pygmy owl as well.
Forgot to mention that one. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you not saying anything and rubbing that in any further, but.
Well, did I mention there was actually two pygmy owls, a male and a female?
Yes, yes, okay. Yes.
All right.
And one of them hunted right in front of you. Yeah, I got it. I got it all.
Okay, gotcha.
So tonight we're going to get into, you know, we're still kind of in catch-up mode. Because it's been a very, very active past year for all of us. 2023 was amazing. And Jason, if you listened to us on a previous podcast, Jason had a rough go with the bears in the Kenai Peninsula. And this year, well, we'll just say more than made up for it. With the images that you guys got this year, it was a pretty amazing trip. And Jason, just for everybody's information, just let everybody know who you went with. Same guy that took care of you last year when you ended up with COVID, or 2 years ago now. But just go ahead and share with everybody who you went with and kind of just how did that trip come about?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. 2023 was just incredible overall, and we just keep talking about it, but it's one of those years that'll be hard to forget, and hopefully we can top some point in the future. Yeah, I went with Scott Stone. Scott Stone does a great job. He's kind of gone away from the day trips and some of the other style of trips, and he's more focusing now on camping trips. So going into the backcountry in Katmai and other locations and camping on the ground with the bears. The idea being that, you know, you're on the ground, you can be closer to the animals. You get to be out there when the light's the best, early in the morning, late in the evening. And it really just creates a really good opportunity for you to spend as much time as possible with the bears on the ground. So this was what I called my makeup COVID trip, if you will, from that previous episode that we talked about, all that fun stuff. And it did absolutely perform way more than I would have expected. And we got lucky. And I'll say right out of the bat, you know, it's not often you get 3 days in a week of sunshine in Alaska, let alone 3 days in a row, let alone 3 days in a row on the 4 days that we were there. So we got very, very, very fortunate to have really good lighting conditions, which really helped make some of our images what they are. You know, the light makes a big difference, obviously. So we went out into the backcountry. We had 5 of us, including Scott Stone. We camped on the ground and we were, you know, sleeping pads, seeing individual person tents. It was a little bit of a rougher trip, you know, for those that are interested in doing it, not as far as physical expectations, but I would say more so for, you know, you're not in a nice, cozy cabin. You're coming back. You're not getting to watch TV or whatever you might want to do to unwind. You know, you're not cozying up with a nice book in an armchair or something. But what a great experience, right? You come back, we're eating freeze-dried meals. We're sitting around a bucket in a bigger tent where we can all be out of the rain and stuff and the weather if it is rainy and windy, and just sharing stories from the day. And then we all climb into our individual tents on a ground pad and sleep. You know, Scott takes safety very seriously, and so you know that there's a bear fence and other, you know, precautions being taken, make sure that food's not in tents, and you know, we're taking all the right precautions there as well. But yeah, that was kind of the experience in a nutshell, like to just kind of the way it was done. We flew into a couple different areas. Then we took a float plane from the last location into the actual location where we camped, and spent 5 days, 4 days on the ground. It was 5 nights, I think, 4 days on the ground with the bears, and focused on fishing bears. So that was what we wanted to do. We went at the right time of the year to try to focus on that. And we kind of thought we were going to miss some things because the salmon spawn hadn't really taken off and water levels were of such that the salmon hadn't been able to make it upstream to where we were as readily as we would have liked. But then things, you know, worked out as if you've seen any of the images, you would probably agree that just things ended up working out where we had quite a few of the salmon running. And the unique thing about this location is the red salmon. You know, it's still kind of a secret location, if you will. So I'm not going to talk much about the actual location, but you know, there's a couple folks that are doing tours out there that can get you into this location. And that's what I would recommend you do, is you talk to those folks to get booked with them to go and have that experience with those fishing bears. But yeah, Ron, we spent 4 days photographing bears, chasing salmon, diving into the stream, catching them, fighting over them. You know, I mean, it's such an incredible experience to be on the ground that close. And I'm, you know how it is, we're safe, but they're at times very, very, very comfortable with you, and they get more and more comfortable with you as time goes on. And the funny part, we actually had one sow. She was a younger sow, and she just liked hanging out with us. I mean, I swear when I say these things, I always think, oh, come on, she's a bear. She's not thinking that way or anything. But I swear every time we'd get set up, we'd turn around and she'd be sitting 10 feet from us watching the other bears fish and stuff. And I don't know if she just felt comfortable around us or what, but there, I even got to a couple times where we kind of had to be like, all right, you know, you need to chew a little bit, you know, you're getting too close and too comfortable. So
she was trying to lure you in.
I don't know. She seemed, you know, pretty gentle and, you know, whatever, but didn't have a very, very, very relaxed temperament, obviously. But yeah, we got to see quite a few boars that were, you know, fighting over fishing spots and fish when they were caught, and the bear they called the old man, which was a great experience for me. Cause when I was on my COVID trip, I did spend that one day in Hallow Bay. And in that one day in Hallow Bay, I didn't get to see this one bear that I was really hoping to see. They call him No Ears. And he's a giant boar, and he's been around for a long time. He's an old bear. And he's just a huge bear, really, really long body and huge body. And he's so long that he doesn't look as big as he is, if that makes sense. So I was hoping to see him. I never got to see him. They hadn't seen him at all in 2023 or in 2022. And in 2023, when we were in camp, he came walking into our camp, or not our camp, but into the stream. And I actually noticed him first, and I actually looked at Scott and said, "Hey, is that No Ears?" And he's like, "Oh, no, it can't. Nobody's seen him for a bit." And he's kind of looks through his thing. He's like, "Oh, my heck, it is him." You know, like, so some folks that probably thought he had passed, whatever. And this location is probably, I don't know, 100 miles plus as the crow flies from where he had been last seen, which everybody knows the bears were wandering and stuff, whatever, but quite a ways away. And I don't know that he'd been seen there much from what folks were saying. Anyways, it was just cool to be able to see that bear specifically show up. And, you know, a bear like that enters the stage and everybody gets all the other bears' attention, and they all kind of like, you know, okay, this here, oh, the boss is here, you know. And he just kind of come in and take a look around, and he didn't even fish, didn't catch a fish, nothing. He just turned around, strolled back out, and the other bears kept doing what they were doing. So we got a couple sightings of him while we were there, which was pretty cool. But yeah, the overall experience was just incredible. The landscape, the scenery, the sunshine, the bears fishing, being right close to us. One of the guys on the trip about got ran over by a young bear that had grabbed a fish from another one and took off running and didn't really quite pay attention where he was running. And like came within a foot or two of running over one of the folks on the tour. So, you know, sometimes it gets a little sketchy in those situations, but safety always being the priority. But he was fine. He was not in any danger. He actually moved out of the way, or I think the bear would have actually physically touched him.
Smart.
If he wouldn't have, because the bear was not looking ahead. He was looking behind him because he was worried about what was going to be chasing him. So, yeah, he had to do a little bit of ninja moves to get out of the way so the bear didn't actually touch him, which if it would have touched him, you know, who knows? That could have been a weird situation. I'm sure it would have still been fine, but you just never know what's going to happen, you know, if that physical contact is actually made. So he was on his toes enough to make that happen, which was good. But
I think, you know, thinking back to conversations we've had about that whole peninsula over there and the importance of the habitat, you know, the whole coastal range wide, you know, we talked to Garrett Venn, and Garrett was way further southwest and talked about the same things. And then of course, Drew, when his group was fighting that pebble mine, talking about the importance of the entire range and not, you know, not removing any of that habitat from the bear's ability to use or the fishery. And then you're talking about a bear that was seen, you know, 100 miles away the year before. It just demonstrates the importance. Even a bear that old that probably is a little bit more set in his ways, know where he wants to be and that kind of thing, showing up 100 miles from where he was last seen is a good indicator of the need for the health of that ecosystem.
Right
over there, and just how much of it the bears actually use.
And this was August, right?
Yeah, it was early August. Yep, the first week in August. Yep.
And you know, one of the things about your trip, and you touched on it, and it's on your Instagram. It's been teasing, you know, people who follow you and your friends and colleagues that were on this trip. There's some of the best grizzly fishing pictures ever taken on that trip that you had. Seriously, the light, the color of the salmon. The you know, the light on the bears, the eyes, the claws, the action. I remember when we were in the field during elk season and we were chatting, you mentioned you had one where the bear had leapt off the bank and was Superman, just totally horizontal over the water, suspended.
Right.
I mean, so it's really worth listeners going to the Beyond the Wild podcast Instagram page and Jason's, of course, and seeing these images and the website and the show notes, still some will be there because they are truly exceptional grizzly bear, brown bear fishing images along the coast of salmon for all the right reasons. All those elements came into play and you guys capitalized superbly on it. Really incredible images.
Appreciate that. Yeah. And, you know, like you said, all of us that were there, it was hard not to get good images with the conditions. You know what I mean? and if you guys don't mind for just a sec, I wouldn't mind talking a little bit about a different approach from some of the folks that went. And, you know, you guys have all heard me mention Harlan Cooper before in previous podcasts. And Harlan was actually on this trip. And one of the interesting things was most of us were taking, you know, a 400 millimeter and a 70 to 200 millimeter because we knew we were going to be pretty close to these bears. And, you know, the kind of shots that we were in our head, we were looking to get. And Harlan actually took an 800 millimeter and his 1-500. And he had a completely different mindset and different goal. And if you go to his page and look at his images, you'll see that reflected. And he wanted that very, very tight, nothing but the face, the fish. The focus was the fish and the face and the claws and the teeth for Harlan. That's what he was looking for.
And he's got a couple that the bear's eyes sharp and the salmon's eyes sharp. And some fantastic images. And again, shooting with an 800 on a 45 megapixel body. So he's got some croppability there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you nailed it, Ron. And you know, Harlan's in those situations with that kind of compression on a lens like that, when you're that close, you know, you're got to be shooting in F8, F11, whatever, to be able to get those features in focus. So, you know, he knew what he wanted, and the light helped him be able to capture it for sure, you know, without having to go high ISO and some things like that. But I just thought it was interesting and unique. And the take of it, you know, what kind of gear do you want to take? Well, it really comes back to some of the things we talked about, you know, knowing what kind of shots you want, you know, because there's a whole list of lenses and approaches you could have taken on a trip like that. And most people will tell you, just take a zoom lens. You're going to be zooming out. The bears are close. Well, if that's what you want is the full bear with the full, you know, frame and everything, then yeah, it makes sense. But if you are looking for specific shots that would include, you know, that tight crop and things of that nature, then maybe an 800 is the right lens to take, right? Mm-hmm. So it was a good reminder for me to make sure that you think about those things before you go on trips like that and think about what is it you're trying to capture. And not just trips like that, but anytime you go into the field, you know, so.
Yeah. That's a good reminder. And I was going to ask about gear because I know you guys all, you know, in it's no different. Anytime we go in the field as a group, everybody ends up with something a little bit different or has a little bit different vision. No matter what's in front of them, somebody's going to shoot tight. Somebody's going to shoot wide. Somebody's going to shoot wider and stitch things together and get, you know, that full environmental scene. And then, you know, if you have the opportunity, bears is not, you know, it's been done and it's been done well. Bears are not the easiest to take a wide angle lens and get the shot you want just for those safety reasons. But, you know, use your imagination, do a little stitching while you're out there with a 70 to 200 instead of a 24 to 70. But you guys all came away with some, as Mark alluded to, just incredible images, and everybody's got a little bit different take on it, which is fun to see.
Yeah. Yeah, from a gear standpoint, is that where you were kind of headed?
Yeah, I was. You had mentioned it, so I'd just like to expand on that a little bit and what your thought processes were for you and what you wanted.
Right. Yeah, for me, I ended up taking my 400. From a photography gear standpoint, I ended up taking my 400, my two R5 bodies, and I took my 70 to 200, and then I took my 1.4 as well. Just because I wanted to be able to have that option to, you know, get a little tighter if I thought it would made sense. And there was a few times where I did that and focused a little bit tighter on a few different things. But the nice thing about this trip was that all you had to take with you to do this camping trip was your photography gear and your clothes. And you're only going to be there for 4.5 days. So you didn't really have to take much. And, you know, on a trip like that, you're in a place like that, you're pretty much living in your waders. So you only needed a couple of, you know, changes of clothes underneath your waders. And it wasn't going to be cold. So you just needed to, you know, bring rain gear and things of that nature. And then your photography gear, like I mentioned. So we, you know, I took my F-stop backpack and all my stuff fit in there, no problem. And then the camp was all provided. Like when we showed up, the nice thing was, is camp was all set up. your tent was set up, your sleeping bag was there, your everything was there, ready to roll. All your food was provided. So the nice thing was you could focus on just what do I need to bring from a photography and clothing standpoint. And then the way that Scott runs his trips is, you know, you have enough room for the weight requirements. You're not super restricted on the weight requirements. And I know that depends on where he's taking you, but where we, the location we went to with the plane he was able to use, we weren't as restricted as some folks are on the kind, on the amount or the weight of gear that they can take. Right. So, but I'd had no problem taking my waders and my boots and, you know, a couple changes of clothes and all my photography gear. I didn't have any problems being within the weight requirements and felt like it was the right kit to take, if you will, for what I was looking for, and ended up working out well, really, really well.
Good. So you flew to Anchorage and then float plane from Lake Hood out of Anchorage? Is that the...
So we flew to Anchorage. Yeah. We flew to Anchorage and then I can't really mention where the second location just because it'll give too much away. But we did fly from Anchorage to another location and then we jumped on a float plane from there to the backcountry. So we were probably about a two and a half hour float plane ride from the last location we stopped to get into the backcountry.
Oh, that was long.
But yeah, it wasn't terrible, right? I mean, we flew into Anchorage. The way those flights usually work, you get there at midnight or whatever, and your flight is the next morning. So you're basically trying to sleep in the Anchorage airport and grab that next flight. And then we actually had an overnight there because of the way the flights worked. And then we got on the float plane the next morning. And, you know, got into camp about noonish when we got into camp. So we had about a half a day to photograph there and then, you know, another 4 days. So it was actually about 4.5 days of photography when you looked at it all. But.
And by my saying long, that's not a criticism of the float plane. When you're flying the Alaska coast, that's a good thing. Weather permitting, I mean, what beautiful scenery to get to experience and just with your smartphone, even film for B-roll as you go, just mesmerizing countryside, right? Or just landscape. So that's awesome that you got to do that much.
Well, and for me and a lot of the guys that were on the trip, you know, when we got to the location, you know, the pilot starts doing some circles and that to kind of figure out which way he's going to come in from. And we could start obviously seeing quite a few bears down on the creek, you know, and it is a creek, not a crick. And we can talk about that difference later, but, the creek head was just loaded with bears everywhere. And you just talk about the excitement, you just get going. You're just like, oh boy, look at them all. You know, there was a lot of bears in the area. I mean, I remember one point we stopped and counted. And from one spot, which you couldn't see the whole creek by any means, but from one location, we counted over 40 bears that we could see. You know, so it was ripe for opportunities of all kinds of shots with cubs, you know, cubs of the year, year old cubs and sows with cubs, sows without cubs, boars, you know, young boars, you know, just you name it. There was the opportunities of all those different types of bears and types of situations to photograph, you know, when they're up on the tundra, you know, eating grasses and stuff, or whether they're down in the creek fishing or whatever, you know, all those different scenarios, anything in between, which was kind of fun to be able to have all those different opportunities in front of you too.
It'd be in great condition that time of year as well, photography, right? Coats.
Yeah.
Everything would be looking fantastic. And something you touched on earlier that, you know, for people who do these, fall in love with trips like this to specific locations and get to know and photograph individuals of a species. It's just so meaningful. It goes beyond the days that you're there, right? And you can look at the photos that you have of no ears and hope he makes it another year. But the bears that you get to know is so meaningful to think about them throughout the year. I mean, they're doing their thing there. We're there, and you in this particular case for such a short period of time, a window, a fantastic trip of a lifetime kind of opportunity, but just to be thinking about them throughout the year and all the things that they're doing and then to possibly see them again, like you're going back someday, right?
Oh yeah.
Probably sooner than later. Right. Oh, yeah. So That's just with some of the bare places I've been to, and you know, and you hear it from people who spend time working in bare locations. It's, you get to know individuals, and it's amazing, you know, to get to see a bear that's, you know, 25, 28 years old, and it's been coming in on these routines, and just think of the how they perceive this planet and how what their world and life is like. It just goes so much for me beyond the photos. And I think I have to remind myself at times to just look at that big picture too and appreciate, you know, the incredible biology and all the aspects of that that are at play there, in addition to capturing the dreamy images you guys got.
Right.
And it was, I mean, being there kind of right when the salmon start rolling in, you're still, it's almost the perfect storm because you're in an area with a lot of bears, but they haven't necessarily established that pecking order on the fishing areas yet. So you're getting a lot of behavior that, you know, 2-3 weeks into it, you're probably not going to see. You're still going to get those individual fishing styles and that kind of thing. But to get them kind of establishing that whose spot is whose, especially with that many boars around, that had to have been, had to have provided a lot of different opportunities, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. So I think I tried to count, and I think I was able to actually photograph 6 different encounters like that when I was there. And that's just ones that I actually was able to put my lens on and photograph. There was multiple ones that we could hear or see, but couldn't photograph, you know, as well. Mm-hmm. So that behavior is not uncommon, right? I mean, it's very, very common, especially when they're trying to establish that pecking order and so on. And the interesting thing was, is it's so much about timing, right? And you just never know. There's a little bit of luck in all this for sure. And I don't take away from that at all, because if we were there a week earlier, we wouldn't have had most of that fighting, if you will, that dominance mm-hmm. Behavior. And if we were there a week later, we would have experienced when the run really took off, because the creek levels rose and, you know, to see the fish, you know, take off and do their actual filling the stream and running, you know, we missed that, you know. So even though that's, you know, and then that puts them in a different area where you're able to actually see bears fishing for the salmon with their backs half out of the water. You know what I mean? So you can actually get photos mm-hmm. of the fish with the bears and things of that nature too. So, you know, I have ulterior motives for going back, not just to have that experience, but to also try to, you know, catch it a little bit different, you know, and again, that just takes some luck with the way things go. You never know for sure when the conditions are going to be right for everything to come together. So, but we did get to, see some crazy stuff. And I will tell you this, because of the circumstances, there's a couple of funny sets of bears, if you will. There was this one sow. She was little. I mean, I'm talking, and she had two, I think they were 2.5-year-old cubs. And I think she was probably I don't know if she was going to kick them. You know, she hadn't kicked them off. So maybe they were only 1.5 years. It was hard to tell because she was so small. But she had these two cubs, and they were not coy, and she was so small, she was not much bigger than they were. But this bear had learned how to make a living by going in, and she almost always exclusively on the boars, and she would go in there and steal a fish from a boar right after he had caught it. And I mean, you want to talk about, like, what are you thinking? Like, you're going to, you know, what are you doing? And we watched it happen so many times. It just got like, she's figured this out. These bears, like most of these boars are like, you know, whatever, take it. I'll eat whatever, you know, I'll go catch another one. Like, but what was so funny about it, and it got a little, you know, Western at times, was because when she'd come in the area, those bears knew that she was going to try to steal their fish. So they'd get a little bit aggressive, and, you know, tensions would rise. And these two little cubs were like, I don't know. They were like on crack. I mean, they just all excited and looking around and, you know, all worried and stuff. And they're worried for, you know, fear of getting attacked by the bears as mom steals the fish and so on. And it was actually one of those cubs that had grabbed a fish and took off running that almost ran over one of the folks on the tour. But that tension, it was crazy. It was almost palpable. When she would come onto the scene, all of us would just get a little bit more nervous, a little bit pay more attention, a little bit like check our surroundings, you know, like where is there any other bears coming? You know, is it what's her escape route? She's going to go steal this fish. I guarantee it. So, you know, we're kind of preparing ourselves for what's about to happen. But it was fun to, like Mark, you referenced it. But, you know, we got to see it within a year, within 4 days, got to see it and learn some of these, you know, these bears' attitudes and behaviors and personalities. And it'd be awesome to go back and see her and see if she's still doing that same thing. And, you know, is she really make her living doing that? Or, you know, is that, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, the individual stories that you kind of learn from these animals. And, you know, then there, we had one bear. He's a great big giant boar. He's a gorgeous bear, big chocolate boar. And we called him the dude because he literally would just sit in the creek and just chill. I mean, he'd sit on his butt, like just chilling on his butt and just sitting there watching everybody fish. And then he'd kind of get up and catch a fish and go back down and he'd just chill. We just call him the dude, you know? So he just chilling, man, nothing over here bothering me, you know? But so, yeah, it's really fun to see all the different personalities for sure. And if you don't think that they're individuals, you're sorely mistaken. They absolutely have, you know, behaviors that are unique, and the way they fish, Ron, you mentioned that they absolutely, and this, I didn't know this, but they, and I learned that on this trip that they actually do have very unique styles. You know, some like the submarine, you know, I'm sure you guys are familiar with that. I wasn't at the time, but where they just stick their head under the water and they just, you know, next thing you know, they'll pop up with a fish in their mouth. And then there's others that, you know, Superman is what we ended up calling him, that he had a way. He'd sit back and he'd sit there and you could tell he was going to go. He'd kind of lift his leg up and he'd go and he'd shake like two or three times and he was going to go. And you could, it was like clockwork. He had his little routine that he did. And then he would do the Superman thing. He would dive full legs, spread all fours and level at the water every single time. And he would, you know, he was successful, I don't know, half the time maybe. But the thing that made us mad about that bear is every time he'd catch a fish, he would never lift it out of the water so we could get a photo of him with it. You know, he's just like, you sucker, like every time, you know. So, I mean, you just, it's fun though, right? And you love it. You love every minute of it. So we got some really cool stuff of him doing his aerials, and but we could never get him with fish. Then there's other bears that it's like they'd catch a fish and they'd do everything in the world to make sure you could get photos of them with the fish in their mouth before they tried to start chomping on it, you know? So yeah, kind of showing off like, look what I got, you know? But anyways, yeah, I could go on and on. Sorry.
Another benefit of going with a guide, right? They can
For sure.
In the right spot, you know, and shine so much light and education on behavior and point things out because they've been there over and over and over.
Absolutely. And that's a good point, Mark. We've talked about it a million times, but Scott does a really good job of that. And Scott's the kind of person that can cater it to what you want too, right? Some people want to have that in your face, very personal experience, you know? So you're that close to those animals. Other people don't want to have that. They want to be back a little bit further and have, you know, to be able to get specific shots. They're not so interested in the closeness as they are the types of shots that they want to get, right? So Scott was good about that and able to, you know, kind of cater the needs of each of us to be able to accomplish what we were trying to accomplish. So a lot to be said for that.
Well, there's also a lot to be said for doing it the way you guys did it. It was a workshop / tour, but you went with a lot of guys that you know.
Right.
Some guys that you didn't know as well, but guys that we're all familiar with. I mean, yourself, Harlan, Dan, Linhart, Craig Miller, all forever owe Craig, but Kelly,
yep.
You know, some guys that you shoot with Harlan and Kelly quite a bit.
Right.
And then of course, Dan is just always out. And Craig is always out in a different part of the country, but to right. go with a group of guys like that, that are kind of like-minded, and that's got to add to the trip as well.
Right. Yeah. And it really does. And, you know, to kind of just to mention it, I don't even know if it's going to be an option for any open spots because I think it's already booked, but we are doing another trip in 2025. you know, doing the same location and doing the same style of trip where we're going to be camping with the bears. But, you know, we're looking to work with Scott and, you know, try to put some more of those opportunities together too here in the future. So
24 or 25?
25.
25. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not going this year?
Not going this year. I'm doing other things this year. Yeah. That are, yeah. I need to just, you know, work gets in the way of my fun. So I just need to quit this stupid job. And you
probably just need to quit, hang it up.
I know.
If it didn't allow you to do all this, yeah.
That's the problem. Yeah.
So what do you have coming up this year? You have any openings on trips that you have this year?
We actually have two openings, I think, for Africa. It's coming down to the wire on that, but we do have two openings, and that's going to be an amazing trip. The price is right for folks that have done Africa. We're doing it with Drew Butterwick, and we're going over to do South Africa. We're doing a two-week adventure starting on the north end of Kruger, doing a couple of concessions, doing a little bit of self-driving, ending up down through the park and into the some concessions on the south end, and flying in and out of Johannesburg. If anybody's interested, you can reach out to me and I can get you the itineraries. The cost is very reasonable. You know, it's right. I'm just going to say it's right in that $6,000 range for two full weeks in Africa, plus your airfare, obviously, and a couple of miscellaneous costs. So if that's something anybody's interested in, that's a great opportunity. The prices are going up like crazy right now. Drew was able to lock those prices down. And most people would know that for a week in Africa and concessions and that, you're probably going to be in that $5,000 range for a week, plus airfare. And again, like I said, those all the camps, all the concessions, all the prices are going up dramatically for 2025 and moving forward. The whole worldwide, you know, inflation is catching up with a lot of things. So airfare is not the cheapest right now. We've been looking, watching that. I'm trying to play the game and wait until after spring break to try to book any airfare because it's just crazy the cost of airfare right now for a lot of places. But yeah, if somebody's able to do that, that's what we got going on. I'm going to, and that's in end of July, the last week of July, the first week in April, the last week in July, the first week in August is when we're planning on doing that. And then headed to Costa Rica with my wife. And that's a tour that's full that actually Kelly put together with some friends and family. But I'm looking forward to that trip. That'll be fun. I've never been to Costa Rica. Looking forward to getting out there and experiencing, you know, three different type of ecosystems within that area and focusing on, you know, pit vipers and amphibians and frogs and so on, and to quetzals and, you know, different birds, tons of different birds, hummingbirds in one area and some other birds of prey and some, you know, things that in a different area.
And sloths, then, you know, can't leave the sloth.
No, I was going there. Sloths and monkeys and all kinds of stuff that we'll obviously see as well. And I am excited about the sloths. I don't know why, but I think it's because I'll finally be able to get a good photo because the animal will hold still long enough for me. But
should have time.
Right, exactly. If I can't get a good photo of a sloth, I definitely need to hang it up.
And Mark, you got some crazy opportunities coming up this year as well. One in particular.
Yeah. Oh, muskox. I'm thinking of going to Alaska this year and going, the muskox tour is mid-September and you're doing that. Not me though. Right.
So, yeah, but it's your trip. Mark got this locked down, but yes.
Yeah,
so my wife Billy will be there. I'm going to be able to be there this year.
Yeah. And Ron and Pilly, they'll lead it. And it is the best week from everything I've learned from talking to other people to be there. Peak colors, it's, again, exceptionally well priced. We put it at a price point that we thought would have tremendous appeal so that it would fill fast. And it's mid-September, 12th to the 19th, flying from Montreal. So you can get to Montreal from anywhere and then hop on the plane. It's a 2.5 hour flight from Montreal, which is not part of the fee. Once you land in Nunavut, very northern part of Quebec, I'm talking way up there, which is super cool. There's a float plane flight And that half hour or so float plane flight is included, as well as everything at camp except alcohol. Basically, it's all inclusive without alcohol there that way. And it's 7 days and phenomenal opportunity with muskox herds in a dramatic northern environment where I've heard from other people that I know that have been there that the northern lights can knock your socks off, and there's ptarmigan, there are raptors, and it's moving up and down a lake. The camp is modern. It's quite remote, but quite comfortable. There's a chef there. All meals are provided. So it's, the price point on that is outstanding as well. So yeah, if you're at all interested, reach out to me or Ron, DM on Instagram, or there's an email on my website, and just get in touch sooner than later, because that's September 12th to 19th. We're also doing it in 25 and 26. We only have 2 spots left currently for 2025, and we have a few spots left for 2026. We already have people committing for 26. Not to put any pressure on anybody, but it's a good idea to map things out when it's limited space trips like this. And muskox, I mean, how cool is that? With, we should have frost. There's a chance. I mean, that time of year, I have not, you know, I've been north, but not that far north, and had snow. So we could get flurries, you know, we could get different seasons in that week. That would be really wonderful photographically. And it's just a great camp atmosphere. So, and then caribou as well. We love doing caribou. We do 3 weeks of caribou mid-autumn, and that's full for 24. And it's, I think we have 2 spots left out of 12. We do 4 a week, 4, 4, and 4. 2 spots left for 2025 for those that are interested. And we're taking names for 26, but won't start committing reservations as far as deposits probably until the end of this year, close to that, maybe even fall. But we'll get it lined up with those that are interested. But that's been really successful as well. And we love doing the caribou. And I just love guiding. I love sharing the experience and the whole aura of these wonderful landscapes and these incredible species and the joy of wildlife photography. Like, you know, Jason's amazing trip that we're talking about today, who knew all those variables would fall into place and it would be so incredible. And you just don't know. And sometimes, you know, people hiking with me, it's like, should they come on the hike to look for animals? And I'm always like, well, if you're able to, yeah, because we don't know what we're going to find. Right. There's always opportunities. Good friends of mine from Australia, Mark and Sue, we did a hike for caribou last fall when they joined me, and we ended up having a silver fox meet us on the tundra carrying fish in its mouth. Mm. You know, so it was just, what was that? And I thought it was an antler. It was hilarious. It stopped, it sat. And so like we paused, didn't want it to run away, but no, it wanted to show us its prize. So it was funny. Mark went ahead because I wanted him to get the images and thinking the fox would take off, and it didn't. It kind of came over, not really close, but close enough for him to get photos, and then spun and came towards Sue and I before ducking into a tuckamore shrub to hide it, I guess, for later. So there'd been a huge amount along the coast there that had died of these fish. So that's another story, but a very fun trip. You just don't know. So it's, yeah, go for it, right? Have these trips, live life, and embrace it, what you can do. It's exciting too. And the other thing about, you know, it's not just guiding these trips, it's making the friends that come on them, but it's something to look forward to, not just as a guide, but you sign up, right? Mm-hmm. Here we are talking about, what are we doing this year? Well, you know, I've got another 2 to 3 months of editing, which is all part of the job. But if, you know, I thought about the other day, you know, if I have to edit, you know, for 4 to 5 months solid, but then get to travel the other months, I take that trade. I take that balance, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's really important to have the images out to help earn, but it's the adventures that we look forward to in this life. You know, it's a big part of our passion as wildlife photographers, but the photography is our love of wildlife, right? It gets us out there to have these experiences and stories and collaboration with one another and fireside chats, which happen at muskox, by the way, fireside chats. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yeah, I'm
if there's super stoked. If there's no aurora, yeah.
Well, that can happen too, right? Why, you know, put the fire, do some slow-mo with the aurora and the fire in the foreground.
Yeah,
who's done that? I don't know.
Cool.
But
You know what, Mark, too, I've heard a lot of rumblings about how the lights are supposed to be just amazing this year. So if you have an opportunity to do a trip that includes Aurora, it might be a good year to be
amazing.
Yep.
Wow. And I've got two opportunities potentially. There's with the muskox and then potentially back to Churchill.
Oh, good. Are you coming in November? We're going to overlap?
I don't know. No, not November this year. Oh, okay. No, it'd be earlier.
That would be a lot of fun.
And then, so yeah, obviously you hit me up on either of those. And then also, if you are interested in loons and Western grebes, swans, all those nesting birds, or freshly hatched, not nesting, we'll leave them alone if they're on the nest, but if they're freshly hatched, we'll have opportunities with babies riding on the back. The Western grebes going a little bit earlier to Minnesota this year. So the Western grebes, you get that rushing behavior. So they'll get up on their feet and cock their neck and they kind of, you know, rush. It's part of the courtship process. So we'll get that as well. So I'm looking forward to another year in Minnesota. And I've honestly, it's almost too easy there. To get incredible pictures. It feels like the laziest photography you've ever done, but it is the most productive by far. You can't finish a day without getting 100 just screaming images. And it doesn't sound like a lot, but you'll take 7,000 to get those 100. But just the behaviors and the proximity and, you know, in the country that they're in, I don't think there's a better opportunity out there.
Yeah, Minnesota.
You'll have an opportunity to play around with some different techniques, whether it's turning your camera upside down on a monopod and shooting water level, whether it's floating your camera off of a flotation device at water level, or there's a rumor that this year there's going to be mounts at water level, so you can throw your camera on a gimbal at water level, and it's a different way of shooting. Your neck is going to be stiff, but I promise you won't regret that. You know, ache and pain with the images that you'll get. So contact me on any of those as well. I'm taking a year off of sage grouse this year. I'm doing a couple projects that I'm being paid to do. And then I've got one spot that I want to get. I want to get sage grouse and these iconic, you know, the Oregon Trail's got these iconic landmarks all over the place. And there's grouse leks close to all of them. And I want to get as many of those iconic locations with grouse in the foreground as I can this year, just for Wyoming Department of Tourism and in combination with some other groups. So that's what I'm going to focus on this spring, but I'm not taking anybody out for grouse except for one person who's I'm trading for some hooping cranes later on. So anyway, yeah. So my spring is going to be, for me and for some projects that I'm doing, but I am looking forward to the rest of the year, sharing some time in the field. And then got another tour in Rocky Mountain National Park at the end of September, early October, through Wildside nature tours that I'm helping with. So there'll be lots of information about that on the website, which is in development. But we should have all of our content up very soon, and probably by the time this podcast is released.
I mean, by the time this podcast comes out, the website should be fully functional and it looks fantastic, very user-friendly. Mm-hmm. It's a great homepage that you can scroll down and just see all the elements of podcast elements throughout, and then hit into the subsequent pages from there. So I really like the layout, the look of it. And as we discuss things, images, you know, in addition to our Instagram and our individual Instagrams, there'll be images tied into shows. And I know we've, you know, I like to, on occasion on podcasts, go on and talk about an animal or some interesting attributes of a species. And my friend Mark from Australia sent some great pictures to go to the website and look at what we were talking about with wombats and their cubes, famous cubes and stuff. So yeah, the website will be a great resource. It'll also connect through to PictureLine, our title sponsor, and anything that we're discussing and promoting about what they have to offer as well, with links there.
Speaking of PictureLine, I know we've talked about it briefly, but just the excitement for what's coming this year. I mean, it's an Olympic year. And so, you know, everybody puts their best foot forward to come up with the best camera they can. And a couple of them already have. I mean, Sony just came up with the A9 Mark III, which is a screaming fast global shutter, just a speed demon machine. And then Nikon has come out with the Z9. The Z9's been out for a while, but they've just come out with some firmware that has kind of taken the focus system to the next level on the Z8 and Z9. And so those are exciting for Nikon shooters. And then, of course, Canon, it's confirmed, sort of, that the R1 is coming. Exactly what it'll be is still up for debate. I think the latest leak specs are pretty close, probably. And that should be announced here in February. So, and then the R5 Mark II will be coming, but that right now, honestly, I hesitate to even say anything because I'm getting tired of all the clickbait. People speculating on what the specs are going to be, because it's just a total shot in the dark. And these clickbait sites, they'll have one thing one week and the next week they'll come out and just completely contradict themselves. And I'm just tired of people guessing. So I'm going to stay away from much of that, but I think it'll be the camera that I want to use. I don't know that the R1 will, but the R5 Mark II, whatever it is going to be the camera that I want to use in the field. And then if they do come out with a high megapixel version, we'll see. I'm not sure I'm going to need it, but it might be fun. But a lot of excitement in the camera world this year.
Yep.
So stay tuned and make sure you visit pictureline.com for, as Mark said, anything that you need, and to keep up with these cameras that are coming. By the way, if you're interested in the 200 to 800 Canon, which, as shocking as it sounds, at what are F9, I think, on the long end.
Wasn't it 9?
Yeah, I think it's 9. It is a phenomenal lens, but they can only get 2 per month. And that's 2 more than a lot of stores can get. So if you're interested in that lens at all, make sure you get a hold of Colin at pictureline.com and get on that list.
Yeah, you know, we talk a lot about it in the past, and we'll keep beating this drum, I'm sure, because it's all about, you know, invest in those memories, right? Invest those experiences. And for those folks that can't afford gear like right away, don't be afraid to go ahead and, you know, invest in the experience and still use PictureLine. Because one of the tricks that we've talked about in the past, and I'll throw this out as another pro tip, it's a rehash for sure. But, you know, if you're not sure what to take on a trip, or you don't know for sure what to spend the money on, use a trip like this to rent a lens or something. You know, they can help you out with that as well, you know, and try it out and put it to the test before you commit all that money to, you know, your hard-earned money to something like that in a piece of gear. But don't be afraid to go and have those experiences too with the, you know, with the gear that you have. You know, sometimes what's the best camera to have, or what's the best gear to have? The one that you have when the opportunity is in front of you, you know. So you can capitalize and make it all work we talk a lot about some of the niche little opportunities and things like that, but don't be afraid to, don't let that keep you from getting out and having these experiences, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But
no FOMO, no fear FOMO. Of missing out. Just no do FOMO. It.
Just do it. Yep.
Just do it. It.
given all these new cameras that, I mean, it has been every year, there's new equipment of all sorts coming out, but as you're pointing out, it's a big year with the Olympics. It will probably create, you know, a lot of availability for high quality used cameras too, as people jump on these new flagships coming out. So for the people on a budget that way, it's something to watch for. There may be a whole bunch of R5s to pick from at a fantastic price this year.
A lot of trickle down with great, great equipment, very capable equipment. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Good point. Well, Mark, go ahead and kick us off.
Yeah, well, it's been fun. I've been waiting to hear the stories from this Brown Bear trip with the best images that I've seen from one trip, the color, the fishing, the action. Check it out on beyondthewildpodcast.com in the show notes section for today's podcast. I had a cool piece of equipment I was going to mention, but that'll have to wait for next time. Just a teaser. And you can find our content on Instagram at our page. Please feel free to share in your stories to help us gain some traction, to get growing, to get back to the numbers that we'd like to be at for doing this podcast. Thanks for tuning in and listening. We appreciate your time. And you can also watch the podcast on YouTube at Beyond the Wild Podcast as well, if you prefer that platform. And make sure to follow and give us a thumbs up and subscribe. That helps as well on that algorithm for us to get going and get traction for what we're trying to accomplish here in the exciting 2024, first year of our new podcast. Once again, guys, it's been great to see you this week. Third episode in the books. More to come, I believe. There's a guest coming on the next one, shaking it up.
And right one on. You won't want to miss.
Very good. Lots of content coming. Thanks for your patience, everybody, as we have been getting off the ground, but it's been an exciting production process and will only continue to ramp up. Have a great week and get out and enjoy the outdoors.